Inside the ship, Miranda watched Anseli with a satisfaction limited by the knowledge that they'd both probably be dead in a few hours. She had been able to help the girl, to bring her out of that listless, terrified submission that was worse than death. It was satisfying to be able to do for Anseli what she had not been able to do for Brunn. Compensation, and she knew it, was fully conscious of it. That didn't make it less real, or less valuable to Anseli. But the girl was nothing like Brunn. Now that she was too far away to explain to Brunn or apologize, she saw that the daily irritations of living with a young genius had blinded her to what Brunn really was. Anseli, so different, brought it home. Miranda rued all the times she had wished Brunn were more down to earth, more persistent. When she got home, if she ever got home, she promised herself that she would take her wild, insouciant daughter into her arms and admit she'd been wrong from the beginning. And she had let herself ignore, for all those decades, the same genius in herself. Why had she pretended to be the sedate, serene Miranda, the beautiful wife and consort, and not admitted, even to herself, the piratical nature, the crackling energy, which she'd inherited in full measure from her own family?
At least Brunn is free to run her own life now. At least that much has been saved.
Miranda glanced at Anseli's taut, anxious little face.
And I will save this one, too, if I can, to live out her own much more limited destiny. Poor thing. Free and cosseted, she will never be a tenth what Brunn is.
She taunted herself inside for that maternal burst of pride, then pushed both pride and taunt away. Her own children were fine people. She let herself linger just a moment on the memory of each face, as a child and as an adult, then locked those memories deep. In the next hour or so would come her last chance, it might be, of mothering anyone, and Anseli deserved the same fierce loyalty. Their distraction group was headed for the engines, as if they intended to sabotage them. Miranda had no idea how that might be accomplished, even if they got that far. She didn't even know what FTL and in-system engines looked like. She followed the others blindly, with a rear guard behind her, noticing that the crew, even Anseli, seemed to know how to do things that set alarms ringing and lights flashing almost every place they went. They had left a trail of broken glass, smashed cabinetry, locks pried open, lighting units darkened. They had been attacked twice. But by gluing shut the doors behind them, their pursuers had been slowed and finally foiled. Now they were in a maintenance passage of some sort. The crewmen had done nothing for the last 10 minutes, but now paused where another passage joined theirs. One of them had opened a hatch in the overhead and pulled down a folding ladder.
Where is this?
Petty Light Chorus looked over.
Aft communications nexus. Another one of those things they could rebuild to communicate with. Pivot! Pass up that toolkit!
Anseli passed it forward. Chorus led the way up the ladder into a dark, crowded space full of more incomprehensible shapes. When they were all jammed in, she turned on her headlight.
Miranda, glue us up.
Miranda and Anseli pulled up the ladder, then the hatch, and sealed its edges with a glue gun. Under Chorus's direction, they clipped lengths out of all wires and cables, making them too short to rejoin, and then turned the ends back and glued them into knobbly masses.
Some of this is probably also navigation stuff. Doesn't matter. Whack it all out.
A few minutes later, she led them between long cylindrical shapes to another folded ladder. But when she tried to open the hatch, it wouldn't move.
Locked?
No.
Chorus pointed her headlamp at the seam between hatch and deck, where the telltale bubbles of yellow sealant were still glistening.
They're using our tricks now.
We have solvent.
Sure, and we can walk right into a trap that way. Let me think a minute.
Miranda sat back against one of the long shapes. Rejuve or no rejuve, her back was aching from the crawling and stooping, and she would like to have had a long nap. Suddenly, Chorus moved again.
They've got the shuttle bay open. Let's go!
Chorus urged them faster. Miranda wondered if the mutineers knew that the groups aboard would try to get to the shuttle bay. Surely they would. And where they might try to intercept them. She still didn't understand the ship's layout well enough to predict that, but she trusted that Chorus took that into account. Certainly, their route seemed circuitous enough. In this hatch and out of that, up into the space between decks, then back down. She was completely confused, and would not have been overly surprised to find herself dropping cleverly back into their cell in the brig. But at last, she saw the warning signs on the bulkheads. Shuttle bay airlocks, extreme caution, topped by a row of red status lights. To either side were personnel airlocks, one with a green light and one with red. Then she saw the bodies lying sprawled like piles of old clothes being sorted for the wash, except for the blood, bright as Pater's blood, on the polished deck, and the men and women in uniform with weapons across the compartment from them.
Hurry up, we've got to get suited up.
It was Hartung. Miranda's heartbeat steadied again.
Perimeter? Holding for now, come on!
The EVA suit lockers inside the shuttle bay held most of the suits. Normally, anyone using the shuttles would be aboard before the hatch opened to vacuum. Three of Hartung's people had suited up in the only suits left inside and gone through the locks to bring back enough for the others. Each could fit only four of the bulky suits at a time through the personnel locks, and fewer than half of Hartung's group were now out in the shuttle bay, helping the outside group break into and activate a shuttle. The red light on one lock turned green, as the one on the other turned red. The hatch opened, and four more pressure suits tumbled out to be grabbed and donned as fast as possible by the crew nearest the lock. Then they crammed into the lock and cycled through. The second lock disgorged another four suits.
Go on, I'm senior. Good luck. Valance, get that suit on!
Hartung, struggling into a suit along with the last of her group, waved as the others pushed into the lock and sent four of her group to the other lock, which would cycle next.
Comm crew coming. Open up for him.
But only two remained, dragging one wounded who turned out to be dead. Kouros's first four suited and exited, then the first lock opened again. She put the comm crew into suits.
Too many. Perimeter's gone. Go!
Shit.
Kouros nodded to the two men who had already volunteered to be rear guard.
Give us every second you can. And thanks.
That left her and Anseli and Miranda.
You and you. I'm staying.
No, I'm staying.
I don't have time to argue with an idiot civ. Get in that suit.
I got you out. I earned this. You know I can kill.
Miranda wrenched Kouros's weapon away and shoved her toward the suits.
Take care of that kid.
Miranda?
Miranda gave Anseli a look she hoped mirrored the petty officer's.
Do what you're told, Pivot. Don't waste this.
She had the weapon. She had the target. She had the chance to be someone she had never allowed herself to be. Flattened to the bulkhead, waiting for the enemy, she felt supremely happy and very much in touch with her lost children and the love of her life. Cecilia's luck ran out before she had completely immobilized the patrol. A flechette holed her suit. The automatic set foam shut off the vacuum leak, but before she could do anything, another mutineer's riot weapon wrapped her in tangle tape. He held the trigger down until she was entirely covered and motionless. Then she judged by the nauseating rotation that they were using her for cover as they advanced on the loyalists by the shuttle bay. The rotation went on and on. She willed herself not to vomit in the suit and tried to pretend she was jumping a series of nostrides with her eyes closed for some reason. It seemed an eternity before the rotation stopped. Cecilia woke to find herself being yelled at by someone from a great distance.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
She's awake. Get the rest of that stuff off her suit.
What stuff?
Then Cecilia began to remember. The fall out of FTL, then the capture, then the mutineer's ship, then the attempt to escape.
I hope you're the good guys.
Well, we think so.
Chief Jones.
We're in a troop shuttle off the ship, but we have a little problem.
Oh? Is Miranda all right?
No. She refused to leave. They were one suit short.
She got Anseli out, didn't she?
Cecilia could just see a blur of light swiping back and forth across her suit's faceplate, as if someone were cleaning it of the opaque glue.
Yes, and told Kouros to get out, and Kouros did.
Good decision. Can you get me out of this suit?
Once we get the tangle stuff off it.
Cecilia emerged from the confines of the suit, feeling as sweaty and dirty as if she'd just ridden a major event. The troop shuttle's interior looked stark and unpromising. A long open space with racks along the sides for weapons and suits and other equipment she didn't recognize. Several of the survivors of the breakout were wounded, propped on pieces of suit, being tended by their fellows. Chief Jones beckoned Cecilia forward.
The problem we have, Sarah, is that not one of us is qualified to pilot this thing, or any other ship. We were hoping you could, but you were so tangled up when we found you that we didn't dare wait. We had one sergeant who had a license for a surface to orbit before he joined fleet, but he hadn't passed the fleet aptitude test and hadn't handled anything like this. He got us out the door, but he's unfamiliar with the navigation system and hasn't a clue what to do next. You're qualified, right?
For a ship like my own, yes. For this one?
Cecilia looked around and bit back the suggestion that they should have asked her what she could pilot before picking a ship.
I suppose you took the one nearest the hatch.
Yes. There's an automatic launch that sort of throws them out. This was sitting on it, so I was hoping...
I had somehow acquired proficiency in flying fleet combat troop shuttles. Well, I suppose I can try.
Are you sure you weren't ever military?
Not me. But it wouldn't do me or any of us any good for me to sit here howling, now would it?
Despite Harris's sense of urgency, she took her flotilla through the intermediate jump points with all due caution, checking Ansible activity along the way. Nothing more from the Ansible at CX-42H, and the only word from HQ was, proceed with caution. Harris would like to have arrived at CX-42H in an off-axis insertion, but the erratic planetoid made that too risky. So she ordered a textbook insertion and hoped the mutineers, if they were there, hadn't had time to mine the entrance. She missed Kutsudas most at times like these, when insertion blur robbed her of eyes at the moment they were most vulnerable. But the scan finally cleared. It had been only a couple of minutes, after all. And the navigation board came up with a perfect match for the chart, except that the erratic planetoid was a degree off from where it should have been.
Ship?
One. Mass is a cruiser. No ID yet.
Mutineers could have disabled the ID.
No fleet cruiser should be here. The last Ansible download had given her all cruiser locations in this sector, and this wasn't one of them.
What's its course?
It's zero acceleration relative to system, Captain. Drives appear to be shut down. They may be trying to lie doggo.
Thank the gods for small mercies. Weapons?
Nothing lit, Captain.
Is that the only vessel in system?
The only thing that size. The search program's on.
Indefatigable continued its own deceleration in company with its companions.
Captain, I have a tentative ID.
Go ahead.
It's based on just the mass data.
Go ahead.
Well, it's the same class as the Bonar Tig. We have to get a lot closer before I can be sure.
Our beacon's transmitting, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
So unless they're all dead over there, they know we're here and who we are.
If their scan's working...
Why wouldn't it be? You want to bet our lives on the notion that they have even their passive scan shut down for some reason? I don't. When will we be in tight beam distance?
40 minutes, Captain. There'll still be a light lag, of course.
That's all right.
Harris considered... If she blew them away without hailing them, which she was inclined to do, she would have to pick up debris proving they were a mutineer ship or she'd be in worse trouble. Officially, at least, being caught by surprise would be the worst. If she hailed them by tight beam...
Captain, Ansible Flash.
Here? What is it?
Local origin, this Ansible, and it's... Oh my god.
The message, please.
Sorry, yes, Captain. It's to be transmitted to any fleet unit querying any Ansible. It's on a 2-hour repeat. Danger blue, danger blue, danger blue. Mutineer fleet. This location on 23-4. That's today, Captain. Ship names include Bonar Tig, Wingate, Matai, Saracen, Endeavor. Attempting to disable Mutineer flagship. Execute code 0. Repeat, execute code 0.
Harris let herself breathe again. Someone on that ship, several someones it would have to be, had just committed suicide. But their deaths would save many.
Weapons, lock on that ship. Give me a solution.
We're still too far out.
I know, but there's some urgency. We're going to micro-jump closer. Any other ships in the system yet?
There might be. Nothing as big as the other named ships.
They've left, but the Loyalists don't have that information.
There's this little something. Yes, it's really little. About the size of a troop shuttle.
Mutineers escaping a disabled cruiser, or Loyalists who had managed to escape the mutineers. Either way, I'd prefer not to destroy it.
Weapons, we want to take out the cruiser and not the troop carrier. Where's the best location? Nav, heads up on this and prepare to micro-jump.
While they calculated, Harris tight-beamed her captains on the other ships and sent them out on search. The weapons officer and navigations officer presented their plot.
Here, Captain.
Do it. And I want a firing solution the instant we come out, and then immediate fire.
A split second later, the screens blurred and cleared again as they micro-jumped. There was the blunt ovoid of the cruiser, showing no activity in drives or weapons or active scan. From this distance, they could get a positive ID. It was the Bonar Tig, last reported on Copper Mountain. The combat troop shuttle was larger than the shuttle Cecilia had taken up from the surface of Xavier that time, but the cockpit, when she reached it, looked much the same. The sergeant had chosen the right-hand seat. He gave her an anxious look as she edged past a console covered with knobs she didn't recognize and took the pilot's seat.
You can fly this, right, Sarah?
We don't know yet. I certainly never trained in it or anything nearly as big.
At first glance, the screens, buttons, dials, and controls were a confusing blur. She forced herself to look at them one by one. She recognized the rate of climb indicator, and then the roll and bank next to it, where it should be.
We're under power?
Yes, Sarah, just 5%. I didn't dare go faster.
Percent power, percent fuel remaining, flying time at this fuel usage, all in the right relation, which meant that here would be the onboard power supply, and there would be the artificial gravity indicators and controls. Something in the right place looked like a scan screen, but it was dark.
Did you try scan?
No, Sarah. I don't know anything about scan.
Under power, flying blind. You have scan experts, Chief. Get someone up here to handle scan while I figure out the rest of this.
Cecilia ignored the scan screens, found the attitude controls, and then the primary navigation system. It was off. She flicked it on, and a screen came on, showing much the same display she'd seen from her own ship. From a different angle, but she recognized it. There was the mass of the system's star. A label popped up, giving its ID number in the catalog. Then another mass, then another appeared, each with a descriptor. Dusty Dirac came up behind her.
Hey, need some help with scan? We need to know who else, if anyone, is in the system. And I've got enough to do learning the rest of these controls.
Gotcha. Do you need Pete right now, or can I switch places with him?
Cecilia glanced over at her co-pilot.
Do you mind?
Not me. I'm way over my depth.
He struggled out of his seat.
See if you can find a manual while you're up.
Harris had finally convinced her of the utility of hard copy manuals, and she hoped the rest of the military had Harris's habit of stashing useful manuals near the places they might be needed. Dusty slid into the co-pilot's seat and started tabbing systems on. Cecilia ignored the results for the moment. She had to decide if she could really get this craft to go where she wanted it to.
Uh-oh.
Chief Jones leaned into the cockpit.
What?
Something big just jumped into the system.
Whose side, I wonder?
Theirs, most likely. We only just got our message out. This is probably one of their people coming to rendezvous.
Cecilia shut her ears to this distraction and located all the controls she was used to from her own runabout. Unfortunately, this craft was missing some she expected. It had no FTL drive, for instance, and had some she'd never seen before. Intended as it was for near-space work, mostly shuttling from orbit to surface and back, its fuel load was far less than she could have hoped. They certainly weren't going to leave the system in it.
How far are we from the ship we left? Oh, about 10 kilometers. Why? How far away should we be for safety if that ship blows up?
Blows up? Why would it blow up?
Because if that's one of their allies coming in and they can't answer, and they can't because we destroyed their ability, it'll probably shoot them preemptively, won't it?
Cecilia, you continue to amaze me. But let's see, a cruiser under fire, not returning fire, shields down. The fireball will be... We need to be a lot farther away.
Their scans will still be foxed by downjump turbulence. We can move now and they may not notice us. Tell everybody to hang on, in case the artificial gravity does something I don't know how to fix. I'm going to go in system. Cecilia changed the ship's attitude, then advanced what she hoped was the throttle. The Delta V changed abruptly and then increased.
It's the Indefatigable. Can you tell if they're loyalists or mutineers? They just blew up Bonar Tig. I'd say that makes them loyalists.
That could be a mistake. Or they may think like you, Cecilia.
Whoever it is, they'll have scan that can pick us up, right? Well, maybe. There's a lot of noise from the ship blowing up. If we hailed them...
And if they're the wrong ship, then we're in worse trouble.
We can at least be listening.
Dusty turned on the receivers and the automatic tuners.
Shuttlecraft, identify yourself or we will fire upon you.
Don't fire! Who are you?
RSS Indefatigable. Serrano commanding. Stand down your weapons.
Weapons? What weapons? Do we have weapons? Combat shuttles do, but I don't know anything about them. Maybe it's these switches.
Don't touch that. Tell them our problem.
We don't have a real pilot aboard. We don't know which switches are which.
What do you have?
Well, a civilian who holds a surface-to-orbit license for a small civilian craft. We used the automatic launch to get out with.
Just stay where you are. Don't touch anything. We'll match course.
Cecilia sat back. Against all odds, they'd escaped the mutineers, escaped the destruction of the ship they'd been on for however many days, and she was still alive. Miranda, she did not want to let the others know how merciful Miranda's death had been. It took hours for the Indefatigable to match courses, and for one of the shuttle pilots aboard it to make an EVA trip across to take over and maneuver the shuttle into the other cruiser's bay. Then at last they could debark and work their way one at a time through the airlocks into the ship proper. Cecilia, rumpled and dirty, saw across the compartment the compact, dark woman she knew better than perhaps any other, Harris Serrano.
I might have known.
What?
You, of course.
Chief Jones looked from one to the other, alert and almost suspicious. Harris transferred her gaze to the chief.
Chief Jones, I'm Commander Serrano. Welcome aboard. I understand you're the ranking NCO?
Ranking survivor, yes, sir. Master Chief Bigelow was senior to me, but he was killed during the escape.
Let's get your wounded to sick bay and get you all something to eat. Then we'll need to hear the whole story.
The captain's office, into which Harris ushered Cecilia, looked nothing like she'd imagined. Blonde, fake wood, soft-focus pictures of desert scenery in peaches and tans.
It's not my ship, really. I inherited it during the mutiny. This is what her former captain wanted.
So, who has your ship?
I don't know. Haven't had time to find out. There is a war on, you know.
Cecilia rubbed her bruised shoulder.
I know. I was in it.
Just what were you doing on a mutineer's ship? And how did you get from there to a combat shuttle? The last I heard, you were clear across Familia space, having just won that horse trials thing.
Cecilia sank into the soft cushions.
It's a long story. It started with finding a home for Brun's children.
The family's not keeping them?
No. I took them away because Miranda and Brun were immobilized after Bunny's death. They couldn't think. They hadn't even named the boys. Anyway, I took them off to Ronnie and Rafa, who were out on this colony.
Cecilia launched into the whole story, and Harris listened without interruption, until Cecilia came to that last bit of the voyage.
So I tried to signal the Ansible, but they got to me before there was time to get confirmation that it had accepted my signal.
It did accept your signal. And Fleet's been watching out for Ansible activity not associated with normal message traffic.
Took you long enough.
So, then they captured you. Then what?
It wasn't so much humiliating as simply unpleasant, but Harris insisted on extracting every bit of information.
I don't see why you need all this from me. You've got the others.
Yes, and I'll talk to them. But your viewpoint is unique. You were in at the beginning, with the Lupescu mess. You were involved with the Crown Prince and the clones. You were at Xavier. And you saw it from a civilian viewpoint. From an old civilian's viewpoint.
Well, this old civilian is hungry and thirsty and tired and could really use a shower.
I know. I'm sorry. It was imperative that I hear your story first, before talking to the others. Remember it, Xavier? You had that lieutenant, what was his name, convinced that you were some sort of covert ops person?
Well,
Well, you'd put me in an odd position.
Don't blame me. You were the one who insisted on coming up to the station. But my point... I'd like you to do that again. I'm burdened by an executive officer of surpassing pedantry. No combat experience at all, very little ship experience, a born paper pusher, but senior to everyone else, and he's driving me insane. If you could keep him busy...
Why not let Petrus take care of him? He's an officer now, right?
Petrus isn't here. This isn't my ship. I mean, not the ship I'd been on with my crew. In the turmoil right after the mutiny, they were assigning officers to command the nearest ships, and this one was just finishing a refit. The crew was a mixed bag from a dozen other ships and the sweepings of regional headquarters. That's where I got Seabolt.
But I'm not covert ops. I'm not military at all.
So you say. I'm willing to bet that even the women in that cell with you will accept the story that your life as a self-indulgent rich horsewoman is just cover. Everyone knows, you see, that self-indulgent rich women are all fools. What did they think of Miranda's trick with the mop?
They were impressed, but it was only fencing.
It was lethal. We stuffed-shirt military types recognize lethality as proof of competence. I will bet that during their own debriefing, at least two of them ask if Miranda wasn't undercover military at some time in her life.
So, what would I have to do?
Just be yourself. But drop some hints, and come confer with me from time to time.
They'll catch me out. There's a lot I don't know.
Of course. You've been undercover. And you do know my Aunt Vida, and many useful facts about the square of the hypotenuse.
What?
Old verse. I don't know how old. It's a spoof on the education of a complete military officer. Play it by ear, Cecilia. You did before. And I'm sure you can now.
It sounds crazy.
Please. If it will loosen Seabolt's tenacious grip on regulations even a little, it'll be a help.
All right. I'll try. Anything for a shower and a meal and a long, peaceful sleep.
Right away.
Cecilia's first sight of Seabolt came at once. He was waiting outside the captain's office. As soon as the door opened, he gave her a cursory look.
Captain, I simply must insist that you file a Signal 42 at once.
Commander Seabolt, you must meet Admiral DeMarctos. She goes by the name of Lady Cecilia DeMarctos, usually.
Admiral? I don't remember that name on the Admiral's list.
Cecilia drew herself up and gave him the look she would have given an impertinent groom.
Naturally not, Commander. It would not do for my name to appear on any list you would have access to.
Admiral, well, excuse me, sir, I didn't think...
Obviously.
Cecilia turned to Harris.
Captain, if you'll excuse me, I'd like to get cleaned up.
Of course, sir.
Harris touched a button on her desk, and one of the Marines stationed outside her door saluted.
Take this officer to her quarters, and be sure someone has arranged clean uniforms.
Yes, sir. What insignia, sir?
Harris tilted her head at Cecilia, who considered quickly the pros and cons of demanding insignia to fit her newly acquired rank.
For the time being, let's leave off all rank insignia. There are advantages.
Seabolt's face was a study. Cecilia repressed a giggle at the combination of indignation and avid curiosity.
Yes, sir.
Chief Jones, in a crisp, clean uniform, looked entirely recovered from what must have been a considerable ordeal. She came to attention in front of Harris's desk. Harris waved her to a seat.
Chief, I'm amazed that you managed to hold together an effective group and get out of that brig. I'm recommending you for a commendation.
Thank you, sir. But they're all good people, including the ones who didn't make it off. We weren't going to let a lot of mutineers get us down.
Were all of you from the same ship, or did they combine loyalists from several ships?
From Saracen and Endeavor that were docked at Copper Mountain's orbital station at the same time. And two personnel were from the station itself, but they didn't make it out.
I'm surprised they didn't just kill you.
So was I. Cecilia said they were probably saving us for prey, for a hunt like that Admiral Lupescu had. She did say to call her Cecilia, but I suppose now I should call her Lady Cecilia.
It might be better. You may hear other things about her, Chief. She and I have been involved in a few adventures before.
Yes, sir. She said you shot Lupescu.
Yes. but she got one of his lieutenants on that trip.
She's not just a rich bitch playgirl, is she, Captain?
Explain.
Well, she and Miranda, who was supposed to be Lord Thornbuckle's widow, they both looked like rich aristocrats. The clothes they were wearing when they were brought in must have cost a year's pay. And the way they talked, that accent. But there was something. I caught on to it that first day. And then later, when they'd come back from cleaning latrines and pass on things they'd seen, that's not what ordinary society ladies are like, as far as I know.
They're not exactly ordinary. Go on, Chief.
Well, the way they got us out. I already told it on tape, but I don't think I can make it as clear as I see it. You know, most of us, back when we first joined, it's hard to get most of us to actually hurt someone, let alone land a killing blow. And I didn't really expect they could do it, just hoped. And then both of them did it, no problems. We couldn't really see from the cell anything but Miranda with the end of the mop. But she lunged. I guess she was a fencer.
Yes. She'd won competitions as a young woman.
She must have kept in practice. I didn't see the blow hit, but I could hear it. One of the men saw it, said it was as neat a strike as he'd ever seen. And the guards were dead, just like that. And Cecilia, Lady Cecilia, I mean, came dragging one of them, so we could use his finger in the cell door ID slot. No fuss, no tears. And Miranda, too. And besides, she had that command presence.
Chief, you have to realize that this is not something I can talk about. You may think what you think, but you're not going to know the whole story. Just know that you've made a very good friend. Someone who doesn't forget her friends.
That's all right, Captain. She did more for us than we did for her. And I'm glad to be a part of whatever it is, so long as it's for the service.
It is.
Harris paused for any more questions, but Jones just sat there looking alert and professional.
Now, we need to get all you people back to duty. This ship's got a scratch crew, some of whom have little or no shipboard experience, let alone cruiser experience and combat. Most of the petty officers were yanked out of regional headquarters. I'd like your assessment of which of your people would be best where. If you could get that to me by this afternoon...
Yes, Captain. I'll get right on it.
We have particular need of expertise in drives. I'm not satisfied with the tuning of the FTL drive, but our FTL tech is just out of school.
Petty Major Forrester and Petty Light Cuirass, Captain, both have FTL drive certification. And there's a sergeant. Forrester would know.
That's a relief. Look, write this up. I need something in the record ASAP.
Cecilia scrubbed until even her fastidious nose couldn't detect the faintest trace of the slop bucket contents, then opened the shower door to find a complete uniform hanging in the dressing cubicle. The automatic underwear dispenser saved her from having to wear someone else's used garments, and the uniform fit well enough. She glanced at herself in the mirror, where the midnight blue made her face paler and her hair flame out against it. She looked... striking was perhaps the best word for it. An escort was waiting for her when she came out into the corridor.
And you are?
Cecilia was unwilling to admit she didn't have a clue which of the various bits of braid and metal meant which. The young woman saluted smartly.
Corporal Belucci, sir. I'm to be your escort for now.
They have explained that we don't talk about my exact position.
Oh, yes, sir. We're not to say a word or repeat anything you say to anyone.
Very good.
Cecilia tried to remember if she was supposed to say anything else.
If the...
There was a pause as Belucci tried to think of a way to address a person whose rank must not be mentioned.
For the time being, you may address me as if I were a civilian, Lady Cecilia de Marctos. That and the fact I'm wearing a uniform without insignia should prevent many problems.
Belucci almost quivered with enthusiasm at being on the inside.
Yes, sir. If the lady would care for a meal first... Or rest?
Food. And I hope the others have already eaten?
Yes, sir, they have. I'm to take the lady to the junior officer's ward room, because the senior officer's ward room is occupied right now, though if...
That's fine, Corporal.
The junior officer's midday mess starts at 1100 hours, and it's only 1000, so you won't have any interruptions. But I'm sure they'll wait until you're through.
Corporal, if I eat for more than an hour, I'll explode.
Even as she said it, Cecilia remembered the long, leisurely gourmet dinners of her past, including the one with Harris early in their acquaintance. She gulped down the food put in front of her and was more than ready for the promised rest. The corporal led her to a row of compartment doors.
"Down here, sir. Right now we're moving things around, but you'll have this to yourself for the first 24 hours anyway, and one of us will be outside the door if you need anything. Right across here is the head. The showers are two down."
"Thank you, Corporal Bellucci."
Inside was a double-bunked compartment with clothes lockers. One of the bunks had a set of pajamas in her size laid out on it. Cecilia pulled off the uniform, put on the pajamas, and then realized that she'd better act the part and hang the uniform up. She found little labels pasted in the locker, making it clear which part went where. The bed was narrower than she liked, but after the cell, she found it easy to sleep. And when she woke, she knew she'd slept too long. She felt logy and uncomfortable. And she had no idea if military personnel ran across the hall to the head, at least she knew what that meant now, in their pajamas or dressed first. She had to have help. Harris was far too busy to tutor her, but she knew where to go. Chief Jones gave her a careful smile.
"Lady Cecilia,
I suppose now we're not in jail, we have to be formal? And here I was hoping you'd finally gift me with your full name."
"Gwentlian Gwelchaeth Jones. My parents had a passion for genealogy and kept telling me to remember my Welsh heritage, which I don't, because I don't even know what planet they were talking about. They died when I was 8.
"There was a Wales on Old Earth. It's in some of the books I've read. Then there's New Wales on Carataea. I don't know anything about it, though, except a lot of the names have double D and double L."
"Hills and castles is all I remember, and something about music. Anyway, I changed my name legally when I entered Fleet, because the recruiter had such a time with my original names, just as all my teachers and the orphanage staff had done. Parents should think of things like that when they name children. I picked my new name out of a book I'd read, with a girl hero who wasn't always fainting or cooking things for the others. Katrina. They called her Cat."
"Ah, and my parents gifted me with not only Cecilia, but a string of other fancy names. I think you're right. Parents should pick something nice and boring and ordinary."
"Anyway, the captain said it'd be better to call you Lady Cecilia, not just Cecilia, so I..."
"That would be fine. Except for one little complication."
"And what's that?"
"Harris Serrano and I have known each other for years. We've been through some difficult times. At times, it's been handy to pretend that I was actually in the military."
Jones just looked at her.
"In covert ops, you see."
"And you're not?"
"It's hard to explain."
"You don't have to explain. The captain gave me a hint."
"I need to explain this much. Harris is having a little problem with someone and needs me to be an admiral."
"Naturally."
"It wasn't my idea. The thing is, I don't know how to be an admiral. I mean, I know Vida, Admiral Serrano."
"You're on first-name terms with an admiral, but you're not an admiral, and you don't know how to pretend to be one?"
"Yes, exactly. I need a coach for the, shipboard sorts of things. That I would have learned if..."
"If you hadn't been busy doing other things." "Of course, sir. I'll be glad to help."
Cecilia caught Seabolt just outside Harris's office.
"Ah, Commander Seabolt. Just the officer I wanted to see."
Seabolt came to attention.
"Sir, Admiral, DeMarktos, I was wondering..."
"Commander, please, I'd like to see your JS-135s.
"The, JS-135s? For the whole ship?"
Cecilia gave him her best Admiral look. Chief Jones had explained that the JS-135 was the history of each item assigned to a ship, its date of service, its maintenance record, and so on. A cruiser had tens of thousands of JS-135s in the computer file, and invariably some of them were not complete.
"You are the executive officer of this vessel, are you not?"
"Yes, Admiral, of course, but..."
"Then I want to see the JS-135s. It should not have escaped you that this would be an ideal time for pilferage and misappropriation of materiel."
"Oh, of course, Admiral. Now?"
"Commander, did someone put a sedative in your cereal? Of course now."
Cecilia's approach to checking JS-135s was to drag Seabolt from one end of the ship to the other, pointing out items and demanding to see the file on each one. He made a couple of abortive attempts to escape her clutches, but Cecilia imagined the cruiser as a badly run training stable and was having fun finding the mice in the feed room, or the fleet equivalent. Thanks to Chief Jones, she had enough of the administrative vocabulary down to convince Seabolt that she was, after all, a real admiral, though a capricious and difficult one. When she felt hungry again, she insisted that he eat with her.
"I can see that I have a lot of work to do here, Commander, and I will require your personal assistance."
"But, Admiral, I have other..."
"I'm sure Commodore Serrano can cope without you for a while. And you are, as you know, responsible for the disposition of all furnishings and munitions."
"Yes, Admiral."
Seabolt looked harried, as well he might, but still knife-creased. Cecilia eyed him as she ate, and wondered if she could make him crawl through some grimy tunnel. If she could find anything grimy on Harris's ship. She had not missed the glances some of the crew sent their way. Wicked delight in seeing Seabolt being harassed by someone else. After the meal, she kept him busy again. He was, despite his trim appearance, not as fit as she, and he was puffing long before she felt tired. She paused between decks and gave him a minatory look.
"Commander, it's important for officers to maintain physical fitness. You shouldn't be out of breath just from running up a few ladders."
"Sorry, sir."
"I'll try to moderate my pace."
Cecilia set off sedately.
"Am I as bad as the mutineer guards? I hoped not."
In the spirit of reform, she inquired seriously into his diet and most recent health checkups.
"I'm sure it's hard with all the work you do, but you won't be much use in combat if you're sick or unfit. You must learn to take care of yourself."
"It's my bad ankle, sir. I broke it a few years ago."
"Oh, ankles. The best thing's exercise, and lots of it."
Cecilia had much personal experience with broken ankles. She explained, at length, everything her physical therapists had told her.
"Now, if you ever blow a shoulder..."
Seabolt looked green. She took pity on him.
"Never mind. You can worry about that if it happens. Now, tomorrow, we'll finish up with the JS-135s and make a start on correlating those to the ship's table of organization."
"Yes, Admiral. What time?"
"I should be ready to start by 0700. We have a lot of work to do."
She slept well that night and woke full of more ideas for things Seabolt could do for her. Harris had plenty to do without worrying about Seabolt and noticed his absence only occasionally, with mild relief. She had actually been able to organize a search for useful debris from the Bonar Tig without his interference. She had prepared a packet for the Ansible and had the patrol craft out mining the jump point. The next mutineers to pop in had a nasty surprise coming. Major O'Connor, the third officer, had taken over the executive officer's function so seamlessly that Harris didn't notice. 10 days later, Seabolt was in her office again. Harris noticed that he looked pale and uncomfortable.
"What is it, Commander?"
"I'd like to request a transfer, sir."
"A transfer? In the middle of a war?"
"I know, sir. It's most inappropriate, but I think I'm losing my mind."
"Seabolt, if this is some kind of joke..."
"No, sir. I swear it's not. It's... I just can't keep up. She always has something else. Every second."
"She?"
"The Admiral. Admiral DeMarctos."
"She's bothering you."
"Not bothering. Not exactly. But she's on me every second, question after question. And you know, Captain, when we got this ship, we didn't have a time to check it over completely. My stomach's burning. My eyes..."
"Go down to sick bay and get some antacid, Commander. You have your stresses in this war, and I have mine."
"But, sir..."
"Tell you what, Commander. If you want off the ship at the next station, I'll find a way to reassign you. But all I can do now is ask the Admiral to let up on you a little. And if I do that, she'll be down on me. I have a flotilla to command and mutineers to find. I'm afraid you'll just have to stick it out."
"Yes, sir."
Seabolt, Harris noticed as he went out the door, wasn't nearly as knife-edged as he had been.
"You might ask the Admiral if she has time to see me."
Harris handed Cecilia a cup of tea.
"You are a wicked woman."
"Yes, I believe I am. But it's keeping him out of your hair, isn't it?"
"Just Don't drive him into a heart attack. That would be another set of forms to fill out.
I'll give him time to work out in the gym. But I'll want real stars at the end of this.
If we all survive, I'll come to your promotion party.
Baron had never seen anything like the bleak, dark rock that jutted from an angry green sea. It was almost enough, almost, to make him want to be back in space. The wind was icy. Baron pulled the hood of his PPU up and sealed it around his face. The prison buildings looked as grim as the rock itself.
Did people really live here? Were they confined here?
I thought it was bad before, but this is ridiculous. I went back in space.
How'd you get assigned here, anyway?
I asked for it, fool that I am. You know, my sister was here once. The Pescu put her in. I wanted to know what it was like, what she'd been through.
Gellin shivered, and Baron suspected it was from more than the cold wind.
Better get set up, sir, if you'll excuse me.
As the one person who had served here, Mahari knew where everything was, and went with forensics to find them quarters that wouldn't interfere with the investigation. Baron had the others unload their supplies off the transport. The scientists would fly on to the weapons research station in the same craft. Margu, he'd noticed, was with them, and a bearded fat man talked to her the whole trip. When the transport had left, he looked around the courtyard. It looked like a nightmare setting. The cold, dark stone walls, the barred gates to the prisoner block. He'd heard about the massacre of the prisoners who didn't mutiny, and wondered which dark streaks on the rocks might be blood. Mahari came back out and spoke to the other troops who started carrying the supplies inside. Baron followed. Inside the staff block, dark stone walls gave way to ordinary paint and plaster.
They're keeping us out of the officers' quarters, sir, but we can use the kitchen over here. It's a better size for this smaller group.
Baron avoided the warning tape the forensic team were already stretching. Organizing the outpost and making sure support ran smoothly occupied him for the first few days. The forensic team went about their business, whatever it was. Baron saw them collecting scrapings from various parts of the courtyard and assumed that they were doing the same in cells and other buildings. Mahari disappeared for hours at a time, coming back pale and tense. Baron didn't want to add to his discomfort by asking more questions and tried to find solvable problems for Mahari to work on. He ventured into the prisoner's block once himself and came out more shaken than he wanted to admit. He'd imagined things like that in the Benignity, not here in the Familius, not in his fleet. He couldn't imagine anyone in his family putting people in those holes, no matter what they'd done. Then Corporal Mahari asked if he'd come along while Mahari pointed out details of his escape for the forensic team.
They threw me off from up there. It's a guard post with a good view of the inner exercise yard and also out to sea.
I don't know how you survived a fall like that into ice water.
I wasn't worried about the water. Not that much, anyway. The rocks now, that and the surge. But you see, sir, I knew something was coming. I'd been telling myself if they push, jump. Use their help, get out as far as possible. I had the PPU on, you see.
The forensic team wanted Mahari to reenact everything but that last leap. Baron felt almost sick just sitting in the first guard post. The whole island seemed to shrink below him, leaving him teetering on a tiny pinhead. Mahari pointed out the rough path to the one from which he'd been thrown, scarcely protected from the sea wind by a low row of stones on the seaward side. Despite his previous experience, Mahari started down the path as if he'd known it all his life. Baron forced himself up and followed more slowly. He felt exposed and unbalanced, as if the great open space to his right and below were pulling at him, tugging him away from the safe path. He slid into the lower guard post with relief and hoped it didn't show too much. One of the forensic team had come with him. The others were back at the high post with the recorders.
And this is where you'd seen someone down?
Yes, over there.
And the drop is...
The forensic tech leaned out, stiffened, and jerked back.
My God! It's... There are rocks sticking out down there. You could have been killed.
That was the idea.
Baron glanced at Mahari and caught a flash of satisfaction on his face. He was not entirely displeased that the other man had reacted so strongly. The other man brought his recorder up to his eye.
Yes, but I guess I'd better record it.
We'd better hang on, just in case of a wind gust.
Mahari glanced at Baron. Baron did not want to get up and hold on to someone who might overbalance and drag him along. He knew that wasn't likely, intellectually, but his body...
Good idea, Corporal.
He got up and took a good handful of the other man's PPU. Mahari, beside him, did the same on the other side. Sure enough, the man leaned out, shooting downward. Wind whipped at him, shaking him. Baron and Mahari leaned back. Mahari, Baron saw, was as white as he himself felt. He was the one with the right to have the shakes here, and he was doing his job. From there, they went back to the high post, and then back across the courtyard to the main building. Down the elevator, into the storage levels, Mahari pointed out to the forensic team where he'd hidden his own supplies, where the entrance to the lava tubes was. They clambered over the broken shards of black rock, now lit by a string of lights. It looked depressing and dangerous, but after the guard posts, Baron felt much safer inside the rock than precariously balanced on its surface. They came around a turn, through another broken segment, into the opening where Mahari had stored his raft. It faced south. Thin winter sunlight speared into the sea entrance, revealing every texture of the lava, here glassy and there scuffed and roughened. It was curiously beautiful, the black rock, the green sea beyond. Baron walked nearer the entrance. Out of the north wind, with the sun on him, it wasn't nearly as cold. He saw something on the floor and squatted to look at it. Something stringy and green, and in it a tiny, many-legged thing with a scarlet shell. He had no idea what he was looking at. Closer to the opening, the noise was less confusing. Now he could distinguish the originals from the echoes. The outer part of the tube slanted downward a little. He stopped there, staring out into the morning.
If it had been daylight, she'd have nailed me.
Baron jumped. He hadn't heard the corporal come up behind him.
I'd have been an easy target, dragging myself over that edge.
How did you? It's slippery.
Suit, wrist, and leg grapples? Push the studs there, with your thumbs.
Baron obeyed, and the bright steel sprang free.
Some kind of special tip. Supposed to stick into most anything. This rock's brittle, but I went slow.
Baron pressed the studs again, and the wrist grapples retracted.
And in the dark? Did you have enhanced night vision?
No. Guards on night duty were issued goggles, but they weren't built into the suits. And I wasn't on night duty when I went over.
Does the water ever come up this far?
Yes, sir. This planet has a solar tide, of course. And then in storms, the wind can pile it up around here. Spray gets in all the time. You probably saw that seaweed back there?
I didn't know what it was.
Some kind of plant. There's lots of it out there, on the rocks, right at the waterline.
It reminds me of the ship.
Sir?
When the bulkhead opened, standing in the dark, looking out. And it was stars and not a sea, but... Never mind that. How long do you think they're going to be?
Looks like they're through.
Baron started up the tube, but Mahari didn't follow. Baron turned and went back to him. The man's face was taut with misery and some determination.
Corporal, I know you said you didn't want to come back here, but let's go back up.
Just a few minutes, sir.
Baron's instincts told him not to leave. He found a smooth bit of floor and sat down.
Come on over here, then. I don't want to have to squint against the sunlight to see you.
The sunlight that flashed off the waves, almost like the sparkle of an enemy's attack on shields. The brightness in the sky that was too much like the flare of the explosion. Mahari came and sat near him.
Thing is, sir, I can't trust myself.
Trust yourself?
They told you I killed Commander Bakarian, right?
Yes.
Well, they probably didn't tell you how.
No, they didn't.
Sir, I...
Mahari looked away.
Being back here, it brings it back. It's like it's still happening, over and over.
Baron knew that feeling, too. Mahari needed a psych nanny. Had needed one for months, most likely. But here they were, right at the site of whatever happened, with no psych nanny available and no transport out for the next several days.
Tell me.
I don't know if I can. And anyway, you'll...
I'll listen. I'll hear you.
I killed her, but I never meant to. Not at first. She tried to kill me. She had the weapon, and then when I got my headlamp on, after she quit moving, I saw so much blood. And her face.
Her face?
I... My wrist grapples were still out, sir. And when we came to hand, I just hit and... It was all gone, sir. The grapples just tore it off.
Meharry was shaking now, eyes squeezed shut, hands clenched under his armpits. Baron reached out and gripped Mahari's arm. He wanted to say something, but he knew he had to wait.
I've never thought of myself like that, sir. Someone who'd attack like that. An officer, a woman. But I did it. I can't pretend I didn't. And if I did it once, and then I thought of my sister when she was in prison here. What had Methy done? What did she have to do to survive? I mean, she's my sister, and she... And I
met your sister once, on my aunt's ship. She's a fine person.
She was also a dangerous killer, he was sure, but that wasn't what Meharry needed to hear right now.
I thought of asking for a psych out, sir. When I realized what I'd done, how evil it was, that I was just like Bakarian. But right then they needed everyone, and I thought, I hoped I could keep it under control. Only now, coming back here, it's all... Right now again, just like I was afraid of. I can't... What if I do it again?
Baron choked back the first easy reassurances. He wished someone else were here, someone with more experience. Harris would know how to talk to this good man, or his grandmother, or Esme.
I guess you understand, sir, why I'm going to have to leave.
Meharry opened his eyes, staring straight out to sea.
It's all right, Lieutenant. Just go on back up and let me sit here and... think things out for a while.
Baron had lost Gormley. He was not going to lose Meharry.
No. No, I'm not going to go back upstairs and let you throw yourself into the sea to die.
Meharry turned toward him, eyes wide with shock.
If you're ever faced with another murderous mutineer commander trying to kill you in the dark, Gellan...
Baron saw the effect of that use of the first name.
If you ever have to fight hand-to-hand like that again, I hope you will do exactly what you did. If she had killed you and completed her plans, we'd all have been a lot worse off. You didn't rip her face off for any of the reasons she'd have done it. If you'd had a weapon, you'd have shot her dead, clean and quick, but you didn't.
But...
And if you ever have to do it again, which we both hope you won't, I trust you will feel the same anguish you've felt since, because you aren't like her. Like any of them. You don't take pleasure in cruelty. It was a horrible situation, and what you had to do to survive is something no decent person could be proud of. But the survival mattered. It matters now. I'm not going to let you destroy it.
Meharry still trembled, but it felt different under Baron's hand. A definite change.
I have nightmares.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Have you talked to the psych nannies about it?
No. I didn't think it was their kind of problem. I mean, it's a moral thing.
When I was captured, it wasn't nearly as bad as this, but I had a rough time afterwards. Nightmares, seeing those men...
You were captured, sir?
Yeah. I was on a deep space repair vessel, Kosciusko.
The one the Bloodhorde tried for?
That very one. They got some personnel aboard, impersonating fleet personnel from a damaged ship. By the time our people realized they were imposters, they were loose in the ship. They got me when I went to inventory for some parts my boss wanted.
Baron stopped, remembering more than he wanted of the next hours and days.
What did they... I mean... If you want to say, sir.
I think the worst was feeling so damned helpless. They had me trussed up, dragged me around like a parcel. They killed 3 people in front of me. One of them a woman they raped first. And I couldn't do a thing. Me, a fleet officer, a blinkin' Serrano. I'd always thought if something happened, I'd react well, solve the problem. And here they'd knocked me cold before I realized anything was wrong.
But you couldn't help it.
No, but that didn't keep me from feeling guilty and thinking I should have done something. Thing is, I got some help with all that afterwards. Didn't want to go, was sure it wouldn't work, just be a black mark on my record. Thought the nightmares and so on were just punishment for being an incompetent young twit.
It really helped?
It really helped. Took a while. Involved going into all sorts of other stuff I thought was totally irrelevant, but it did help.
Maybe I should...
I think so. At least give it a try before you quit on it. There are always ways to die if it doesn't work.
There is that, sir.
Meharry sat up straighter, stretched his arms.
Sorry, I shouldn't have...
What, bothered me? What else are jigs for?
Of course you're supposed to bother me. It's part of my training. If you want to make Master Chief someday, you'll have to recognize your duty to bother young officers.
I can't imagine making Master Chief right now, sir.
Well, I can't imagine making Admiral, but given the way your family and mine tend to mature, maybe we'd better start working on it.
Do you think they all have this kind of thing to deal with?
Bad memories? Times they feel they screwed up? I guess. I never really thought about it, but I know my aunt does. She doesn't talk about it to me.
No, nor Methy with me. Sir, thanks. I was just purely desperate.
I know. And it may come back, at least until you get some treatment. But you're a lot more than one woman killed in self-defense, Gellin Mahari.
And you're a lot more than one mistake in damage control. I'll bet you did the best you could, and you were trying to save lives. Maybe you'd have lost people anyway.
It's still my responsibility.
So tell me about it. You listen to me, I'll listen to you.
This wasn't in any leadership manual, and Baron was dead sure his aunt had never been in a situation like this. But he had demanded trust. Now he had to give it. That much he knew, bone deep.
All right. There was the hull breach aft of the compartment I was working in.
Don't they usually have a chief running that?
The Rejuve problem. Not enough chiefs, too many jigs. Actually, our station was up on troop deck, but they needed all of us. So there I was, with my team. Enough of the bulkhead between us and the hull breach had spalled off to send shrapnel through the compartment, causing a lot of damage. When we went in, it was dark, cold, wet, slippery, and you couldn't see more than a meter at first.
Sounds like a bad stormy night here.
What I worried about most was a hydraulic leak. I'd been warned about those, and sure enough, there was one. And then, whether the bulkhead would hold. It was strained, and that's where the air was going.
He told the next part quickly. How they'd put up the big patch, how they'd been told to go on and check the environmental tanks.
Did you have moles in your unit?
No, they were sending us some moles, they said. But in the meantime, we could look at gauges and read them off. We had one guy with a chem scan. So we rigged emergency lighting. The deck was wet, of course, and part of it was icy as well. Pressure was way down, and the temperature.
Was the fight still going on?
Yeah, but we were too busy to pay much attention. What I should have known was that we had the wrong kind of chem scan. The one we had was fine for the rest of the ship, but didn't identify organics. There was a spike.
He went on with the rest, gesturing to show where everyone had been and what he'd tried to do.
I couldn't move, you see. Not without moving the oxygen around. It's dispersing all the time, of course, but moving would make it happen faster. And Gormley, he was the youngest, the newest. I didn't realize. I thought I'd convinced him to stand still, but he thought I was moving.
He triggered it?
He was scared. I guess when I turned my head away from him, he thought we were leaving him alone, but I wouldn't have.
Of course not. If you were that kind, you'd have bolted for the airlock first thing and blown them all up. Kid should have listened to you.
I said the wrong things.
I doubt it. You kept him there longer than he'd have stayed on his own, right? And then he panicked. In the dark and cold, knowing he was standing in something that could blow him to bits, I can understand that, though he was wrong.
I couldn't stop him. And if I'd known what I should have about the chem scan, it wouldn't have happened anyway. We'd have known it was a methane leak right off. Two people dead, several injured, because I thought environmental was boring.
I guess you do know about guilt. So how did you survive, standing in the oxygen?
Blind luck. I don't know, really. I was not cold, but they said the explosion jammed me in between a couple of tanks. I came out fine.
Fine? A medical evacuation here, and how many hours in the regen tanks? With all due respect, sir, I think if I need the psych nannies, maybe you do too.
Maybe I do.
Now he'd let it out, Baron could see the resemblance to his earlier experience, when he'd felt so inadequate because he couldn't save them all.
Sauce for the goose, eh? So neither of us gets to jump into the ocean. It's a deal, is it?
Deal, sir.
They shook hands on it. Baron had the sense that he was shaking hands on another deal. One he didn't quite understand yet.
The Serrano Legacy, Against the Odds, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 1998, Elizabeth Moon. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2009, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. performed by Nanette Savard, Colleen Delaney, David Coyne, Peter Stray, Tim Getman, Elizabeth Demery, Kate Foster, Eric Messner, Michael Glenn, Mort Shelby, Sonny Lasky, Lily Beacon, Terrence Aselford, Michael John Casey, James Lewis, Richard Rowan, Christopher Grayville, Margie Tompros, Dylan Lynch, Jonathan Watkins, Ken Jackson, Joe Brack, Tim Carlin, James Konacek, Tony Nam, Casey Platt, Andy Clements, Thomas Penny, Tom Simpson, Jason Stiles, Scott McCormick, Ren Casey, Elizabeth Jernigan, M.B. Van Dorn, Johan Detweiler, Amanda Thickpenny, and Lily David. Directed by Nanette Savard. Produced by Rick Rowan and Wayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Chris Rowan. Graphic audio sound design by Chris Rowan, Greg Reinfeld, and Brian Rogers. Book adapted for graphic audio by Wilson T. Ferrier. Additional original music by Brian Patton. If you enjoyed Against the Odds, be sure to look for Rogue Angel, available at Road Stops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net.
Anya Creed.
What can I do for you?
We need you to go to Antarctica.
Why?
It's classified.
This is getting ridiculous. Okay, pal. Just what in the hell have you got me mixed up in here?
I found something amazing. This.
This is incredible.
According to the carbon dating we did, it's over 10,000 years old.
There's no way humans could have made this 10,000 years ago. You're not implying extraterrestrial?
Why not?
Where in the world did you ever find that?
I'm on a dig at the base of Horlick Mountain.
So when do we leave for the dig site?
Tomorrow morning, first thing.
So, you're our newest addition here.
I guess so.
Welcome. My name is Colonel Thompson. I'm in charge of the operation here at Horlick. Allow me to introduce you to Major Braden.
What the hell are you doing here?
You're in trouble, sweetheart.
You bastard. You sold me out.
The time to come clean is now, Miss Creed. Major Braden, you have something for me?
Yes, sir.
You took my laptop, so what? Go ahead and open it.
Any last words?
Boom.
Too late for that, my dear.
Oh, Anya?
You've got to pull it together. There's a bomb rigged to explode in less than 30 minutes. It's going to bring down the entire mountain on top of us unless we can get it deactivated.
This is not a drill. We need to evacuate the camp. Move, people!
I'm staying to help Hawk and his team.
You could die.
Maybe.
I'll never forgive myself if you die.
I've got to go.
Rogue Angel 16. Polar Quest. From Graphic Audio. If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. 870-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different Graphic Audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets that include 5 books of a series, available only at www.graphicaudio.net.